And welcome back to Cool Science Radio. I'm John Wells. Our first guest this morning is John Nosta, who is the founder of Nosta Lab, a digital health think tank. Nosta and his company are entrenched in the world of science, medicine, and innovation. He's currently ranked as the number one global influencer in digital health and generally regarded as one of the top global strategic and creative thinkers in this important and expanding area. His focus is on guiding companies, non-government organizations, and governments through the dynamics of exponential change in the health tech marketplace. John Nosta, welcome to Cool Science Radio.
Pleasure to be here. Looking forward to having some fun.
Yeah, and it's a pleasure to have you on the program. John, why don't you first tell us about Nosta Lab?
Well, you know, we see a lot of interesting areas of innovation in the world today. My focus is particularly around health technology. But what I find is that ideas in of themselves, unless diffused, unless driven into the complex environment or healthcare system, doesn't get realized. So what Nosta Lab does, it allows innovators to diffuse innovation into a marketplace.
Okay. All right. And tell us about your background.
Well, I spent a little bit of time studying cardiovascular pathophysiology at Harvard, published a few papers, but decided that the traditional medical career was not right for me and spent many years in advertising and marketing. So I jokingly say that I'm bilingual in the sense that I speak medicine and marketing. And if you add a layer of technology into that, I guess it's three perspectives that allow me to effectively communicate some of these fundamental changes.
Yeah, and those two areas can be mutually exclusive. So, so you're playing an important role. That is for sure. So, what are your observations? And you can take any time frame that you'd like. Maybe the late 1900s up to 2000 up until approximately now. What do you see for the future? You know, take it any way you'd like.
Well, you know, one of the words that comes up a lot is this notion of exponential change and inflection point. And it's a bit of marketing bravado, scientific bravado, but I really believe that we are at a fundamental change in human history. And when we look back, we can try to find points of similarity. You know, interestingly, if we go back 100 years, over 100 years, the year 1900, we see a very similar perspective to that of 2000. Those were not the beginning of the centuries. Interestingly, we saw at the year 1900, changes emerge around 1920, with the emergence of relativity, things like indoor plumbing, the Russian Revolution, World War I. And what I'm finding today, an interesting comparison, is that the 21st century didn't begin in the year 2000. In fact, people would often say, well, Y2K happened. But interestingly, Y2K didn't happen. What we saw was the little blip of 2007 where this thing called the smartphone came into existence. And that, I think, was the big jump into the new century. But what we're seeing now, the emergence of artificial intelligence, of big data analytics, the empowerment of the consumer, even elements of social strife that we saw in 1915, we're seeing today, complicated by the emergence of issues around healthcare and aging population, things like dementia, metabolic syndrome, and diabetes. So I think we are at a unique point in human history, and these are discussions that we have to have today because tomorrow everything changes.
Yeah, and who are some of the clients that you represent?
I work with a variety of clients. I sit on the Google Health Advisory Board, so I offer some perspective in that context. I work with large pharma companies such as Novartis and Merck, providing some kinds of input and perspective for them.
Yeah. So Apple's Mac, when they first came out, was absolutely a game changer with the fonts, with the GUI, with all of those different things.
Completely.
And then, of course, Steve's iPhone was even bigger, and as you say, it dramatically changed the landscape. Tim's Apple Watch continues to gather, you know, a lot of useful apps. What do you believe will be Apple's legacy going forward?
Well, let's go back to early Apple and talk about that other thing that sort of languished. And that was the Newton. We all remember the Newton. It was largely considered a colossal failure.
Sure.
But Newton really was a prototypical multifunction smartphone device. Scully was a big advocate for this. But the interesting thing about the Newton was that technology didn't align with innovation. In other words, we had no bandwidth. We had no memory. We had no storage. We had no data. So the Newton was a great idea. What we're seeing now is a great idea that's being realized because technology supports it. So, you know, when we listen to John Scully, who feels that health technology will be bigger than the personal computer, when we listen to Tim Cook talk about, as he looks back at the legacy of Apple, he expects that health will be its biggest contribution to humanity. So when you look at the writing on the wall there, I think that it's clearly an important dynamic, that health mediated through technology and innovation is going to be a big game changer.
Every time I hear John Scully's name, I mean, I love words and I collect quotes from all sorts of different people. But every time I hear John Scully's name, I think about that quote from Steve Jobs when he turns to him and says, Do you want to market colored sugar water, or do you want to change the world?
Yep. I've asked John about that question many times. In fact, I'm going to be spending time with him in October at the CNS Summit meeting, and we're going to have a fireside chat. And that will be one of the comments. Because I'm curious, John, if there's a new quote that somehow would reflect that, not dynamic today. What is the sugar water of today? And what is the dynamic that could change that? Is it some aspect of technology? Is it the pharmaceutical industry? Is it the way healthcare is managed in a sort of old school position with the black bag? Are those the colored sugar water of today? So I think that's going to be very, very interesting because we are at another fundamental change, another inflection point, if you will.
You know, between Apple and Android, there's probably a couple hundred flatulence apps. I mean, there are people that are writing pieces of software that have nothing to do with helping to end suffering. And there are people that just want to hit a home run. They want to knock out their technology like McDonald's knocks out hamburgers. And so I think that maybe one of the colored sugar waters could be a sort of a selfishness to have resources, to make money, those sorts of things, when truly there are Elon Musks and a number of other people who are really trying to do good. And in the molecular biology space, we recently spoke to a company called Oren Therapeutics, who their top line goal, and they've got a fascinating product, their top line goal is to end or to mitigate human suffering. And those are goals that I like.
It's very interesting because we see the emergence of what even Scully and Steve Jobs has referred to as the noble pursuit, that sense of doing right by doing good, or doing well by doing right. And I think that's emerging today as we look at sort of the democratization of innovation, that we're seeing that opportunity of alleviating human suffering, those big things. It's not the what, the how, but the why. And it's those profound whys that are real game changers.
Yeah, you sent me I think it was a Forbes article where John Scully said that he thought that Apple's legacy would be in healthcare. Do you agree with that?
Well, you know, if you look at what Tim Cook said, several months ago, he believes that its greatest impact will be in health. So I guess it's a little bit of word choice there. If you look at finance and disruption to the marketplace, certainly the smartphone, the changes in the music industry, in photography, you know, a la Kodak, are extraordinary changes. But when it comes to the personalized change, if technology can help save my life, it becomes greater by an order of magnitude outside of the financial constraints. So I don't know if Apple will become ultimately a health company. My bet is that it will have a variety of points of innovation, but in the final analysis, health is the biggest business in the world. So if it's a social decision, if you want to eliminate human suffering, it's a noble goal. If you want to go after the biggest market that is ready for disruption, that is quite broken, if you will, I think that health is a similar business objective. So it makes a lot of sense any way you slice or dice it.
John, are we prepared to take responsibility for our own health? You know, the cardiologist will order a bunch of tests, do this, do that. And now we're wearing a smart watch that'll tell us when we are not in, you know, when we're out of sync and we may have AFib or something like that, or when we're in rhythm or out of rhythm. Are we prepared to take responsibility for our own health?
Well, one of the fundamental trends that we're seeing in the marketplace today is the empowerment of the consumer. Consumer-centric or patient-centric drug development, user experiences that let the consumer be at the center of the process. That's a driving change. We're also seeing that patients, caregivers, just everyday folks like you and me want to have a greater voice in understanding care and be involved in the decisions. And what that really has come down to is the shift from control to collaboration. In the old days, we'd go to the doctor and he would give us a pill. Today, we go to the doctor and she discusses a care plan and engages us in a collaborative dynamic. So it's not just the consumer taking an active role in healthcare. It's the consumer living in a collaborative environment where we can make choices today about future prospects and things that might happen tomorrow. So the dynamic is a little bit more complex than that, but I think absolutely we're seeing people take much more of an active role. Now, here's the interesting thing. It might be a child of an older parent who is taking a more active role in care, because that older parent may not to. And the other side of this coin is that we're seeing a new generation of digital natives who grew up with Uber, who grew up with a smartphone, who grew up with apps that are analytical and diagnostic in some way. And that's just a natural part of being alive today. So there are many trends that are pushing this forward, but absolutely, from almost any perspective, we are involved in this collaboratory of life, if you will.
John, Lynn and I are about to start our seventh year on Cool Science Radio since we began, and we've had over 625 interviews. And one of the common themes that we see again and again and again is collaboration, where technology used to be siloed off. Now it's more in sharing information, and it's as you say, collaboration. And then you get things like the crowd is smarter than any individual person, and we interviewed an organization that is trying to wrestle through some of these undiagnosed illnesses. I believe there's over 6,500 that have been cataloged so far, maybe even more. And they're throwing this stuff out to the crowd where you can go on and put your symptoms, and they throw it out across the free and captured world, basically, and experts out there, or anybody can chime in on it. So this collaboration thing is something which is just fascinating to us.
Well, you know, I think that the nature of innovation itself is a collaborative dynamic. It's been said that collaboration is the new competitive advantage. Because we see the democratization of thinking and ideas, because we see the internet and the ability to reach out to people across great distances instantaneously, we're seeing that collaboration is becoming an essential tool. Now, interestingly, I've argued this, and I've gotten into trouble a few times, so I'll probably get yelled at by the professional community.
But John, John, it's good to get in trouble.
I agree. So here's the concept. I believe in certain instances, the collective intelligence of patients and caregivers is greater than that of the physician.
Yeah.
And you know, I mean, physicians have a hierarchy. They're oftentimes pedantic and rigid and don't see out of the box. But I know personally of moms who have children with life-threatening disease such as cancer. And these parents have almost an encyclopedic knowledge of their child's blood work and blood chemistries, of experimental clinical trials that are available. And I'm finding that knowledge base, when combined with the acumen of clinical medicine, of physicians classically, traditionally trained, is extraordinarily powerful. And the secret to that is a collaborative engagement.
Yeah. If you are just joining us on Cool Science Radio, we're having a conversation with John Nosta. He's the founder of Nosta Lab, a digital health think tank, which is clearly located at the intersection of science, medicine, and innovation. We talked about Mac. We talked about Apple, Tim Cook, John Sculley. Google will not stand on the sidelines. They're a very innovative company, and they've got a lot of things going on that a lot of people don't even know about. What do you believe their role will be in healthcare?
Well, while Google is looking at some methodological consideration, some devices, if you will, I think that like Volvo, we can consolidate it into one word. Volvo owns safety. I think Google can own data.
Yeah.
And to me, I think that data is extraordinarily important. We talk about data and big data and data analytics almost as sort of, well, that's what you have to say today. But my perspective is that data is going to be the third fundamental window into humanity, and it has to live in the context of the telescope. And remember, Copernicus got into trouble with that concept.
Sure.
The microscope that allowed us to see a vast, amazing world much smaller than ours. But the third window will be data, because data will open up insights to the way we live, the way we act, and add to that a layer of advanced analytics, machine learning, and artificial intelligence, and it will actually fundamentally push human evolution in new and unexpected directions. So, you know, albeit there are lots of concerns about data and data privacy and who owns data and the morality of certain data insights, but I think that's really a major consideration for the folks at Google.
Yes, and I couldn't agree more. I mean, data is strategic, and along with it being everywhere, there are now tools and algorithms that are even self-learning that can go out and look for patterns, and they're starting to design and build pattern recognition type chips that'll be able to go out with this data and be able to find patterns that we haven't even thought about.
Well, John, let's riff on this a little bit. This is something that I just wrote for Psychology Today. And it's interesting that what we're seeing is that a lot of data, as it exists now, data that sits on floppy disks, data that sits in computers from old clinical trials, offers the opportunity for review to find things that we've missed.
That's right.
Let's face it, the human mind may not be the best analytical engine to review data. And my proposition is that the next big thing to recycle might not be plastic. It might not be straws. It might not be aluminum. It might be data itself, because there's vast data sets that offer insights into things that humans have missed, that AI and machine learning may be able to find not only quickly, but at tremendously lower cost. So when we think about the data onslaught, I think we have to look at data in retrospect. They also offer opportunities to find tremendous insights that are extraordinarily economical. It's data recycling.
Data recycling. It's fascinating. I'm glad you brought that up. We're going to have further conversations about these sorts
sure.
of
sure.
these sorts of things. Now, we are broadcasting live, our little NPR affiliate here from Park City, Utah. And in Park City, for the most part, if you think you've torn your meniscus on a ski trail, or you've fallen off of your mountain bike going down a steep trail and bang your head, for the most part, the folks here in Park City have resources to be able to get an MRI or a CAT scan or those sorts of things. And we're sort of in a bubble here, because there are many locations in the world, one, where people don't have the resources for this, and two, there are locations in this world where the technology is not even there because it's so expensive and cumbersome and difficult to operate and expensive to operate. What can we do to help people have more access to this type of technology?
Well, John, there's an interesting company called Nanox, N-A-N-O-X, Israeli-based company, that's looking at some of the basic aspects of imaging and changing the game. You know, when you think about X-ray imaging or traditional CAT scan imaging, it uses this old tube that has to heat up, that uses a lot of energy, that gives off a tremendous amount of radiation. And what Nanox has done is
digitized it, of course.
And what they've done is they've taken that source and they've digitized it. They've put it on a chip, if you will, and they're making medical imaging less expensive, simply available, something that could fit in a suitcase, if you will. And they're providing the opportunity for people around the world to have scanning that is both diagnostic, in the sense that if you have a head injury or abdominal pain, but also that can be preventative, because the accessibility of Nanox's technology allows countless people to get a scan to find things like cancer at a point where it can be treated very, very simply. I'm real excited about this company. I was kind of going through my notes and writing things down. To me, when you're looking for unicorns, right, we all kind of look for unicorns.
Yeah.
I think that here's the opportunity for something to be a unicorn, but it's different. It's not $1 billion. To me, it's the ability of a company to impact 1 billion lives. So I was kind of coming up, maybe it's an Ubercorn. Maybe, John, we can come up with something that advances the traditional financial unicorn discussion into something that is really even bigger than that. You know, when we talk about fundamental change, we talk about aspects of digitization. And what Nanox is doing here is they're digitizing the process. Their growth, I expect, will be deceptive in the sense that it'll take off extraordinarily fast.
And this will be low voltage.
Well, the thing is, you can plug it into a 110-volt outlet. You can take an inexpensive generator and plug it in. So it's no longer this extraordinarily big, clunky, energy-consuming device. It's fairly simple, and that's because it's digitized. But here's another interesting fact about it. You know, when we, you or I, go to get a CT scan, you know, one of the problems about recurrent CT scans, let's say to track that back or knee injury, is the accumulated radiation dose. And the interesting thing, you know, when you go back to the old X-ray tube, it basically provides a continuous amount of radiation to your body. But because this dynamic is gated, in other words, it can go on and off, what you get is a pulse of radiation. So the total amount of radiation exposure is a small fraction of what we would get with traditional CT imaging. So, you know, when you look at this, I think it's extraordinarily powerful, and it's a big game changer.
Low voltage, less weight, can be taken anywhere, much less cost.
You're looking at $10,000 versus millions of dollars. Now right. Just think about what this does, not only in the Midwest, but what about Sub-Saharan Africa? What about China? What about India, where the ratio of available scanners to population is almost insurmountable. And what I find is most interesting is that the ability of this technology to potentially be something that can detect disease earlier. One scan per person per year can help find disease at an early stage. And that leads us to this notion of stage zero disease. Very interesting. We're talking kind of binary here, ones and zeros. But stage zero disease, where it no longer is sort of clinically manifest, but it's a stage where we can aggressively intervene. Now, the other side of this equation is real interesting because it's the data story. The interesting thing about Nanox is that it's not just a device, it's data. And the ability to transmit this data, to use artificial intelligence, to use offsite radiology organizations to read it, it empowers the patient and the local physician. So, you know, it's an extraordinarily powerful game changer.
And John, do you know the management team at Nanox?
Yes, the management team is very interesting. If you look back and look at the founder of Nanox, that is Rand Olcon, and he's quite the innovator. He was the brains behind wireless charging. So when you look at a track record of moving products to market, there's a successful track here too. There are also several interesting initiatives and partnerships that are in play. that I can't speak about publicly, but
sure.
They're very interesting names that are going to be partnering with this company to help bring this vision to reality.
And does he believe in the noble pursuit? Is he going to try to bring this as cost effectively to the masses as he can?
Without a doubt. And I think that grand sense of nobility that Ron brings to this is articulated in their website. Their website is not about technology. Their website, the first page of their website, is democratizing medical imaging. That's bringing medical imaging to everyone who needs it. And it's a global consortium that's driving preventative healthcare screening for all. So again, that's that fundamental aspect of what the digital world is doing now. It's the democratization, the collaboration that is the game changer to NANOX. That's why I find their vision to be so unique and so powerful, because it's not a new device. It's something to change the world and let us live healthier and longer lives.
Well, we have to get them on our show. That is for sure. And I wanted to ask you: do they have beta tests? Are they a couple of years away?
I think that, as I understand it, they have working devices, images in place, prototypes that are up and running now. So I think that this will be rolled out very soon, within the next year, to either a full scale rollout or prototypes. I'm not exactly sure about that. But the lab is up and running.
Okay.
And the technology is not hypothetical. The technology is quite real.
And correct me if I'm wrong, the FDA just doesn't take drugs through various phases and reviews, but they also take instrumentation. So if they wanted to, they could fast track this, right?
Sure.
Yeah.
And I think that what we're looking at here, in the context of, let's say, digital health, it's not an athletic option. And let me back up on that a little bit. So many of the things that we see, activity trackers, how many steps did you take, what is your blood oxygen level, these things are they're used by people who generally don't need to use them. But what we're seeing is a fundamental shift from what is an athletic option or a clinical option to a clinical imperative. And that I think personifies what NANOX is doing. This is technology that is becoming a clinical imperative, because this is a great unmet need in the world today. The ability to accurately scan for injury and diagnosis and preventative medicine is just fundamental.
You know, telemedicine has had some starts and some stops, and it my understanding is it really hasn't grabbed hold yet. But I still think that that's promising. What do you believe about telemedicine, and will that ever really grab a stronghold?
Interestingly, I think that telemedicine's greatest opportunity might be in the developing world, where women don't get effective prenatal care, or patients cannot manage their condition because there's no medical discussions with clinicians, physicians, or nurses. So one opportunity is to push telemedicine into new environments. Now, telemedicine is a little bit more complex than that. There's teleconsultation. There's telepsychiatry. There are many other aspects. The problem in America is that many of us have reasonable access to care. But when we see the emerging use of telemedicine, for example, teleconsultation, using advanced devices that work on our smartphone allow us to see our consultant cardiologist, who is a 2 or 3 hour drive away, by using our phone. So I've often talked about telemedicine and telemedicine 2.0, where we begin to use analytics, diagnostic tools that patients can use to send data directly to a caregiver, directly to into a clinician. So it's not just speaking to a physician on the phone and saying, how are you? But it's sending your EKG directly. It's sending your heart sound directly to the physician. There's a company called Echo, EKO, that actually uses a device that you place on your chest that records the heart sound and the EKG simultaneously, can actually predict an aspect of contractility, how well your heart is beating. And that could be very powerful for patients with congestive heart failure,
of course,
who need to be monitored on a regular basis, but but don't have the time or ability to travel 2 or 3 hours to see a cardiologist at a major medical center. So I think that telemedicine will advance in two principal directions. One, in unmet areas, whether that be in sub-Saharan Africa or patients who can't see a psychologist or psychiatrist or cardiologist. But it will also advance by providing unique tools that are processed through our smartphone that give the clinician powerful diagnostic tools to evaluate our condition.
Yeah. Well, before we let you go, are there any other global trends you think we should know about?
You know, I'm fascinated by this recent meeting with Jack Ma and Elon Musk.
Yeah.
And Elon Musk said that artificial intelligence will make humans look like a tree. And I have to unpack that for a little bit, but it frightens people because it changes the very essence of what it means to be a human. So to me, I think that it's not fearful. It's exciting because the future offers us and technology offers us the opportunity to actually become more human. And what I mean by that is our sensory awareness is only a small fraction of the reality in the world. Dogs smell 50 times greater than we do. So where is that true reality? We only see a small part of the electromagnetic spectrum. So I think that our enhanced sensory awareness through things like brain interfaces, and that's not really scary. You know, Elon Musk talks about neural lace and connecting a computer to your brain. We've been doing that for 20 or 30 years. It's called a cochlear implant.
Yeah.
Patients have electronic connections to their brain. So the basis is here, and that's going to grow robustly. And the interesting thing is, if I have a cochlear implant, I may want to download a program when I go to the opera so I could enhance my user experience at the opera. And then when I go to a car race or when I go to a rock concert or something else like that, I will download a new program and re-experience that in a richer, more profound way. It's like getting the new program downloaded to your Tesla as it sits in your garage at night.
And I couldn't agree with you more. I mean, we've had reading glasses forever. We've had pacemakers. These are things to augment and to enhance our reality. Interestingly, I don't think I've ever had a conversation with anybody about AI without them at some point asking, when are the robots going to come and kill me? And so there is a little bit of fear out there. I think we're going to be okay, and I'm pretty excited about the future.
The nature
as well.
Of innovation is fear and wonder. And wonder. It's a duality. And if you think about fire, man's first technology, even today, fire destroys, burns buildings down. It causes a tremendous amount of destruction. We have fire insurance. But fire heats our homes and cooks our dinner. And I believe that it's exactly analogous to new types of innovation, such as artificial intelligence.
John Nosta, the founder of Nosta Lab, digital health think tank. John and his company are right in the middle of everything here with the intersection of science, medicine, and innovation. John, before I let you go, and thank you, promise me that you'll come back on the program.
You bet. It'd be my pleasure, John.
Okay.
As long as you have Lynn back.
Oh, she'll be back. We'll have her back soon.
Okay, great.
Thanks, John.
My pleasure.
Okay, bye.